That feeling of home, feeling safe and secure, it's so vital, so important to our well-being. I know every time I go off on a work trip, I'm basically counting the minutes until I can get home and recharge. Neuroanthropologist John Allen believes that there is a deeper significance to that pull back home. He says it's one of the most important inventions in our evolution, one that marked our shift from nest-building apes to humans. Steve Paulson caught up with him to find out why.
It's one of those universal things, but I think home is sort of taken for granted, and we haven't really appreciated how central that is, both as a biological unit and as a cultural unit for everybody.
And yet culturally, I would think ideas of what makes a home are so different. I mean, it's clear that it's more than just a house. Necessarily make a home. But, you know, some people might want that McMansion, and other people, other cultures, you know, let's say Australian nomads, it would have an entirely different idea of what makes a home.
Yeah, and that's why I kind of get at the idea that you build home from the inside out. And so home could be literally the absence of a structure. It could be the landscape you live in. But that feeling is, I think, shared. And so it's also defined by who you share a home with and what your as we anthropologists might say, a kin group is. But those also vary in composition. So really, it's why I try to look at it from this sort of basic cognitive perspective.
So what do you think are the essential qualities that makes someplace a home?
I think it is other people. And usually those other people would be related to you, but not necessarily. And so those people define to some extent that you interact with, whose lives are synchronized with your lives, that I think really reinforces a home feeling. It's also the place where you sleep and recover from whatever you define as the outside world.
You're talking about home as refuge, right? I mean, it's sort of it's the thing that's sort of not the outside world. It's the familiar.
Exactly.
It's almost an extension of yourself.
It is. And you define that world. It's the part of the environment that at least you feel like you define. Just because you have a little bit around you and you're familiar with it doesn't really protect you from huge predators or tornadoes or any of the other thousands of things in the world that are out to get you. But by defining it that way, by creating this space, you kind of trick your body into this feeling of security and safety. We're really quite unique in that regard. So it does seem like something new that came at least from our branch of the evolutionary tree.
It sounds like you're making the argument that home is partly what makes us human. And this was something pivotal that happened in our evolutionary history.
Yeah, partly is right. I'm not saying it's everything, but I certainly think it's part of the package. Because if we look at great apes, let's say orangutans and chimpanzees, who are our closest relatives, and then gorillas, you know, one thing they do that's sort of unique to them is they make a little bed every night out of leaves or grasses or whatever are up in the tree, and they sleep there in their bed. But they never have that bed in the same place twice. They're always moving within a home range, as we use the word there, but over an area. So they don't ever hunker down and stay in a place. So for some reason in our evolutionary past, well, after we split for them, we started to hunker down in a place, at least for an extended period of time relative to our relatives.
But there are other animal species that do have one place. I mean, there are the beehives, dens, bird nests, prairie dog homes, towns, all that.
Exactly. And I think those are what would be convergent evolution. And there are benefits to exploiting and knowing a territory and space. But it's interesting that at least in our way of doing things, which meaning primate way of doing things, we were the only ones who really embraced that.
So take us back into this evolutionary history. What do you think changed? And when do you think this happened, when our ancient ancestors started to develop this new sense of home? I guess what you're saying is staying put.
An archaeologist named Glenn Isaac many years ago suggested what he called a home-based model. And this would have come about 3 million years after we split, when he starts seeing cooperative hunting, stone tool use, and other sort of behaviors that at least start to hint at a human way of doing things as opposed to an ape way of doing things. And so he argued that for a lot of the same reasons that why home is important now, it's a place where people can pool resources, where children can be raised collectively. It's one interesting thing, at least to anthropologists, is that when an ape has a child, and it's a female who only takes care of the one child, even if she's in a group, she has one at a time. One of the advantages, if you want to look at it that way, that our ancestors had is they started to be able to handle more than one baby at a time, more than one dependent kid. And that's probably much more efficient in a home setting. That is, you can trade off care between the mother and the father, between and relatives. And, you know, food and collective raising of kids is more efficient in if you know where the kids are, in a way.
There are so many interesting questions that this raises. I mean, one is whether those cultures that stopped being nomadic, that settled down in a physical space, I mean, established communities that they were not moving around, did something change psychologically? Did it sort of, I don't know, was there a whole different mindset then?
I think there are different mindsets that go along with how you live, yes. The nomadic people, they keep redefining their homes in different places. I have a friend who does a lot of backpacking and hiking, and he says how, you know, he's got a kit, and he goes camping, and he feels like when he's taken all his stuff, his coffee, you know, mug, his plate, and he builds a fire, he feels at home again. And so in a sense, nomadic peoples do the same thing. And it is different when you're always surrounded by your stuff. But I do actually think that feeling is probably very common. And then what's changing is this external world of how much where you start defining not everybody in your group as being part of your home or a part of your family, but where you start breaking down larger groups into smaller, more self-contained units. And that leads ultimately to us, where we think of the nuclear family as a natural thing, as the normal way people are, which is very odd.
So let's bring the story to the present then. What does all of this evolutionary history tell us about what home means today?
I think the main thing, again, about at home is the whole idea of security and a sense of safety from the world surrounding us. And I think that when you mix that up with an economic system where houses and dwellings are really important economic investments, not just for protection and shelter, but as an investment, then you start to mix up the safety you feel with home and the security with a speculative investment. And I think it can be there, as economists would say, as a confidence amplifier potentially for people who are living in their homes and using them as investment vehicles.
Well, it seems like there's something deeper as well. I mean, if you were suggesting that having a home is part of what it means to be human, then... Mm-hmm. What does that say?
Yes.
If we don't have a home or a house, I mean, is it sort of a fundamental human right to have a house?
In Scotland, it is. In the UN Charter, it's considered to be that, but only Scotland is a nation state actually codified that.
What does that mean? That Scotland
that they have
has
in
a legal
their
right
and they have a legal a right to shelter and home is part of their constitution or whatever their structure they've in the last few years have put that in, but it does. The flip side of not having a home is being homeless, obviously, and that talking to homeless people or people who've been homeless, their sense of marginalization, of not belonging, of not only not having a place to live, but not having an identity anymore. Just this was a sort of side thing I found in doing research for this. You know, there are a lot of studies, brain studies, of, you know, what bits of your brain light up when you're looking at something that's disgusting or stigmatized or whatever. And even in these studies that aren't even looking at homelessness, they would use a picture of a homeless person as their sort of prompt to elicit a disgusted reaction. And it shows how fundamental that view is, at least in our society.
Yeah. I'm curious whether any of this that we've been talking about has hit home for you personally, emotionally.
I've lived a lot of different places. I've lived overseas. And every time I've moved, you know, there's a time of adjustment and a time where you feel like, oh, this is new, this is strange, this is hard to live here. And then, you know, one day it's not. One day it becomes home. And what I find looking at that sort of experience and how I felt is I was totally unaware of it happening, that I can't put my finger on the day a strange place became home. And yet it happened over and over again in my life. So it shows our resiliency there. which gets back to the hallmark of really what it is to be human, is to be flexible, to be able to eat all sorts of different things, to be able to live under different situations, and to be able to adapt, because we aren't tied like a bee or a wasp to a certain genetic program that we can deal with these things. And the tools that we have are really, that are biological at a real basic level, are also flexible. And so they let us do things and adjust.
Neuroanthropologist John Allen, he's the author of Home, How Habitat Made Us Human. Steve Paulson talked with him.